As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I have a, let's call it a available free agent board with veterans that would be available to come in and help. And no, we stuck with our plan and we let these young guys play and get valuable experience. And, you know, at the end of the day, we did lay a good foundation.
Welcome into one of these years, our Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, joined by Nick Baumgartner, and we made it. We made it, Nick.
We did. We did.
Extra week and all.
Yeah. How about that?
This was I only kind of made it.
Well, I would say I made it because, like, I think we told ourselves before the beginning of this year that this wasn't going to be the year. So
right.
Like,
right.
So with that in mind, I think this was a much more digestible year than it probably could have been. But I think we made it. Yeah, you did, Chris. You made it in spirit, of course.
I had a little COVID situation pop up at the house here, so I didn't get to go to the last game. I had to watch the Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes postseason press conferences on
YouTube.
Well,
hey, I saved your chair, and I gave you the tall chair for the last game, by the way. You had the one that wouldn't bend
there
down.
Go. Yeah. I don't know what happened there. Yeah, we had one of those home games, we ended up with a chair that was higher than the press table,
like,
so you couldn't get your legs under it.
But anyway, we did make it.
The challenges of the Ford Field press box.
Right.
It's weird because, and this has come up a bunch of times over the second half of the season, but this was a 3-13-1 team. Mm-hmm. And I think in the last mailbag I mentioned that it reminded me a little bit of, there are different stages of the rebuild, but it reminded me a little bit of how the Tigers felt this year, because people were, at the end of that season came and people were like, oh man, I was having so much fun watching that team.
Right, sure.
Even though they weren't that good, they had a lot of fun. And it felt like that.
Right, yeah.
For the Lions, especially the second, you know, once they started winning, they went 3-3 down the stretch, had some fun performances, and I think they get to that point with that record where you're like, well, I'd like to see a lot more of these guys, I think speaks to the effort level that they put in.
Now, I don't know what we said at the very beginning of the year, but like, I think when we went all the way back, if we would go all the way back and look and, you know, go back to podcasts in January or February, or even maybe, you know, in August and July, and talk about when we would get into like, what are they looking for from the season? The biggest, 30,000 foot question. And our answer was always the same. It was, get yourself to the end of the year with improvement in all areas, in like all these random areas. Like, get yourself to the end of the year and tell yourself that Sewell is a better player than he was when the year started, right? Like all these guys. And when you looked at it at the end of the year, that happened. I think that happened far more than it didn't. There were some cases, of course, due to injury, I think, that it didn't. But Chris, were there any cases this year where we looked at a guy and said, my God, he was a massive disappointment in terms of his play and he played 17 games? No, I don't think that happened. I think everybody that made it through got a little bit better. Maybe not as much as you'd like, but everybody that made it through, I think, got a little better. And I think ultimately, I think that's what you wanted this year, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, we talked about, like, I think they would have liked to get more. And Holmes even kind of touched on it. Somebody asked him about it, like, from Derek Barnes or from Levi Onwuzurike, like, some of those guys. But yeah, I mean, I think all things considered, yeah, it's hard to really pull out anyone. Like you said, I don't know that there were that many guys where you're like, that he was really terrible. Like,
yeah,
Jamie Collins sort of started the year like that, and they got rid of him right away.
So, right?
I mean, I think there were some cases where you would have liked to see a little bit more of a jump, I guess, at some point. But even looking back on some of the guys that, you know, even for the first half of the year, we were talking like, oh, this isn't coming along the way you want. Like, Austin Bryant wound up with 4.5 sacks and played pretty well down the stretch. And Julian Okorah had 5 sacks. And
Harris.
Yeah, I mean, Harris.
No bigger example.
We've been talking about him being a problem for
a terrible
3 years. Right.
Right.
And you got something out of him. So, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think
they
have reason between the development they got, between how these players responded to the coaching staff, having some money to work with. They got just about everything they wanted out of this year. And you're not. I don't know that you're going to go, you know, 10-7 next year, but you will go into August feeling like this team is capable of competing for most of the season. Like, I don't know if they're a playoff team, but if Holmes can do anything this offseason, they should be able to hang in there a lot longer than they did this year.
I mean, exactly. Because I think that when we started the year and you look back and you thought to yourself, they're going to have the worst roster in the NFL. That's what we thought, you know, when the year started. And in those early months of, you know, talking to Campbell, and he would say, you know, like, I know when you spoke with him the first time, when you guys sat down or whatever it was, and he talked about the we're going to have to rely on undrafted guys, like, way more than you guys probably think.
Right.
Like, it's going to be a strain and we're going to have to do it. And, like, all of that stuff, you know, it added up in the end to a motivated group in the way that I think we thought was possible, but was going to really have to take a dedication from Holmes and Campbell that I didn't know if we thought was going to actually happen. Were they going to see it all the way through, right? And I think that's what Holmes was, like, so proud of when he talked to us yesterday, was that they did. They had all these opportunities this year. We saw them all in camp. You know, we were out at camp for, like, 2 days when we were like, they're probably going to keep this Jerry Jacobs, who I don't even know if he can play. But, like, they love the guy, so they're probably going to keep him over somebody who's probably better than him. And they're just going to go with this. And they're going to do this all year, and it's going to be hard. But if you can get to the end of the year with all these little pockets of, like, oh, well, you know, we were in a lot of these games and we actually won a couple, and we did have the worst roster in the league, but we were not the worst team in the league. We're not ending the year feeling like we're a disaster. We're ending the year feeling like we're on our way up. And if you look at all the teams that are in that bottom third along with the Lions, they're either firing their coach right now or, like, completely lost. And the Lions are in the exception, I think, in that weird tier that you don't want to be in, but for the first time in a long time, it does feel like they're climbing up towards something instead of just, like, either free falling or staying wherever they're at and just kind of staying there.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I like that you brought up that Campbell quote, because it was like when he got hired in late January, I talked to him, I think, in February, or early February, and that was at the. He said, like, you know, why do you think I'm putting together this coaching staff the way I am? Because we know, like, we might have 3 rookie free agents starting for us. And I was like, oh, that's not great. And then we got into the year, because at the time, I think it was before free agency, it was before the draft. So I think we were all thinking, well, they can find someone to plug in here, and they can find someone to plug in here. And they tried to do that a little bit, but that was really the first time where I was like, okay, they are
all in.
They're going to strip this all the way down to the to the foundation. And like, this isn't just a few tweaks to get through at 9-8.
To,
like,
the studs.
They are pulling everything apart here. And so it sort of jumped out then. And you're right. It carried through. Now we're 11 months later, and you see that they had that was in place. And I think that's what you wrote coming out of the Holmes press conference, you know, that they stuck to this plan. And as you go back now to when I talked to Campbell in February and when Holmes did his first pressers, and then when I talked to Holmes in June or whatever it was, and now all this thread kind of goes through the whole year. It wasn't like they got caught off guard at any point. Even as these injuries started to mount, they didn't, like, oh, we didn't prepare for this at all.
Yeah.
They had someone that they were willing to throw out there and just see what he could do. And I tweeted, I thought that was the most interesting part for me of what Holmes said, is that they had, as every GM does, you know, the list of guys at every position, veterans that you could plug in. And they're like cornerback, some of those positions you can go find. I mean, they had Nickell Robey-Coleman on their roster. There's
on the practice squad.
You can go find guys at cornerback who have been in the league for 8 years and can start for you on 2 days' notice. And they didn't want to do that. They wanted to stick with these young guys. And now I think it should pay off, right? I mean, yeah, that's the goal, is that when you come back in April, you don't have 50 guys who are swimming in it. You have a bunch of players with experience.
And you have 50 guys who are ready to run through a wall for your coaches right now. Like, that's what I think the plan was. And it's so impressive to me that they stuck to it, because I think, Chris, like, we could see, especially, we don't talk to Holmes as much, but I think we could see from Campbell in the early months and weeks of the season how hard it was, because they knew all the things that you just said. Like, we can go find a couple of corners that would fix some of these problems right now, but like, what would that do? What would that do for us, really? You know, we get an inch closer in a game that really isn't going to matter in the long run with a guy that's not going to be here. But maybe we find out something about a Jerry Jacobs, you know, in a situation where he maybe costs us a game 1 week, and then 6 weeks later looks like a guy who we're going to keep. Like that. But the strain, I think, that they went through together when they were winless, and when everybody was like, oh my God, they might not win a game. Like, to not hit the panic button then.
Yeah.
To me, like that, you know, that he Holmes spoke like a more confident person yesterday, I think. And I think Campbell has become a more confident speaking person as he's gone on, because I think they both know that they survived an incredibly difficult stretch of time there. And they did it exactly how they said they were going to do it. And it worked the way they thought it was going to work. And I think going forward, you see two guys that are completely confident in what they're doing. I don't know if it's going to work, but they're completely,
gotta add that. Yeah.
They are completely bought in to what they're doing, Campbell and Holmes, and completely tied together at the hip in this. Is what it looks like. That's what it seems like, right, at this point. So, you know, if it's different, then they're doing a good job of selling otherwise. But that's my read on it.
Well, and I think that is interesting too, because this, the hiring process last year was, you know, I think the Lions had a much better process. I don't think there's any question than when they hired Patricia and just basically let Bob Quinn do whatever he wanted.
Right.
You know, they had, a lot of people helping out last year. Chris Spielman's still around. I think that they were willing to admit where they had some faults. But what was interesting about it is that they didn't, you know, a lot of times you want your GM to make the coach hire, or at least be a big voice in who you're hiring as coach. And they pretty much did this at the same time. I mean, they hired Holmes and Campbell together. Like, I think they talked, Holmes and Campbell talked once or twice, but
interviews were overlapping.
It wasn't like they had Holmes for a month and then they hired Campbell. They hired them together and said, all right, we think these personalities are going to work together.
Mm.
But you really, I mean, you don't know.
No.
That is something where that could have fallen apart pretty quickly, and we would have felt it right away. You know, Campbell refusing to play guys that Holmes brought in or something. You know, like, you could have felt it. And I think that that's noteworthy, that we're now a year into this and they're still very much on the same page with everything. And Holmes even mentioned too, you know, Campbell, when Campbell took over the play calling, he went to Holmes and said, I need to do this. And Holmes said, okay, it's your team. Do what you think you need to do. But he didn't, this wasn't just him, Campbell pulling the plug on a bunch of stuff. This was collaborative, as they keep saying. Everyone's going to have a voice in it. If someone, you know, can disagree, feel free to disagree with what we're doing. And I think it's noteworthy that they are a year into it and they're still right there with each other, because this wasn't Quinn and Patricia, where you brought two friends in. It wasn't, you know, Holmes hired Campbell. This was the search committee picking two guys from very different spots in their careers and very different backgrounds and thinking it was going to work. And so far, it looks like it's going to work. So I think that's important, too, to be here where they're at and still feel pretty good about that relationship.
Yeah, Campbell, like, I think the more we've learned about him throughout the year and everything else, like, I just don't know if there's another guy that understands a team environment or culture or whatever, like what a good one is, like better than him. There's some that probably understand it that in coaching as well as him. I don't think you're going to find one in football right now that knows what that means or looks like better than him. And that means that he understands that his ego cannot compete with Brad Holmes's ego. And I think Campbell's life in football probably helps him in some of those areas. And I think Holmes is like that too, just as a person. But I think it probably helps Holmes having Campbell be a guy who's not like that. Like you just said, Chris, like not a guy who's like, I'm not doing this. I'm not having an 0-17 record on my head, right? I'm not having this sluggish whatever. I'm calling the plays because I want to call the plays. Now, that's not what happened, as we've discovered. They made a change there, I think, because Dan Campbell realized his quarterback wasn't jiving with the offensive coordinator, and right. He had no choice. They couldn't cut Jared Goff. They weren't going to dump him. He had no choice but to make that work in the moment. And as much as he respected Anthony Lynn, you know, I think that Holmes saying, you know, sharing that with us, like, I think it shows how much Campbell cares about all this. And I think that you're just not going to find a lot of guys who care about a team situation more than him. And that has shown all year. And it has been probably the theme of the season, and it will become the theme of their franchise. Like, you are not going to come here if you're not going to be, you know, completely and totally team first. You'll be out. We'll cut you on week one. We don't care. Like, that's kind of, and you know, Holmes said that too. We've shown everyone who we are, and you know, hopefully they all see that, and the people who get it will want to be here, and the people who don't won't, and that'll be that. And I mean, hey, fair enough. Right? Easier said than done, but fair enough.
So what's your read on the Lynn situation now that we've gotten to the end of it? I mean, I think we knew all along what more or less was going on there and sort of how it unfolded, but now we've got a better feel for it. That I mean, I think that Campbell pulled the plug on it during that bye week before they went back and played Pittsburgh, but it sounds like it had been brewing for a while before that, and they tried to kind of power through it, and it just didn't work. So on the one hand, you've got sort of the positives of this. Campbell, you know, realized it wasn't working. He made the change. Things got better after it. The staff still stayed together. Credit to Anthony Lynn for handling it like a total pro. He came out during every coordinator window every week and answered questions. Never complained. I mean, he said that, you know, this wasn't the job I got hired to do, but I'm here to help the team, whatever helps us win. And he went and, you know, was run game coordinator or whatever. All that, I think, is positive. The flip side of it is that Campbell's first offensive coordinator hire didn't get through half a season before they were like, this is terrible. So does that give you any concern over, I guess, the process of how they got there and sort of the challenges as they figure out what they need to do at that spot?
It does. That gives the concern there is, you know, I think in some ways it was not avoidable after you made the decision to bring Goff in. Because whoever your offensive coordinator was at that time from there, because it was so early, right? The Stafford trade with Goff and everything. I don't even know if Lynn would have been hired yet or if he had it. It just happened.
That was the other thing I was going to throw. I think Lynn got hired on like January 27th or something. And then the Stafford trade was like,
the next day, like
two or three days later. Like, so I don't know if they told Anthony Lynn that Jared Goff was going to be his quarterback.
Exactly. So, I mean, and I don't think that he, No, and I don't know if he'd have taken the job, like, to be quite honest, because it doesn't fit. It does not fit. I mean, it doesn't fit the style of offense, I don't think, that, you know, that Lynn runs. And I will also say this, Anthony Lynn's a really good football coach, very good football coach, that is well-respected all over the place across the league, including by Dan Campbell. And I think what happened here is a lot of stuff that was outside of people's control, because, like, Goff was a quarterback who came into this season with confidence in the trash can. He had none. It was completely shattered, as we all saw. Anthony Lynn is a really good football coach who's old school and is not from the school of, I'm going to baby this guy along. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Like, I don't think that that's how he approached it. I think he was very consistent with all of his players, including, like, we would see, you know, how many times we see Lynn getting Swift's ass, you know, when they were out there in camp, like, you know, I'm not going to tell you, you know, I know that they all think you're whatever, but if you're going to have, you know, I'm going to let you have it. I mean, that's how he coaches. And I don't think Goff was responding to that necessarily as well as maybe Campbell and maybe hoped. And I think when you heard Anthony Lynn midseason say Dan wanted to talk to his quarterback, I think that's what that was. It was, I need to be the person who gauges where Jared's head is at here, you know, in game, because you and him are not jiving. And I think that's what it was. And I think Lynn respected that. And I think Campbell, to me, that's not cause for concern. To me, that's a sign of a coach who knows what he's doing and is confident in himself, whether it works or it doesn't. And he didn't make that decision, I don't think, because he wanted to call plays. He made it because I think he saw his quarterback drowning and needed to find anything he could think of to change that in the moment. And as it proved out, right, it worked. I mean, he was better in the second half of the season than he was in the first. And I think that's probably part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little unfortunate for Anthony Lynn, because like you said, I think he's a really good football coach. I think, you know, the stuff with the Chargers basically fell apart because he wasn't a great game manager. Like,
yeah, and their
manager,
owners,
like,
and their owner's an idiot.
Right.
That's
not but I think he initially was going to take this year off and then try to get a head coaching job or whatever again. And now, you know, I don't know if this gets held against him or whatever, or if he tries to go back to be a head coach somewhere or what. I mean, we've talked before. I think he'd be really good if he ever wanted to go to college and just like run the show there. He'd be a great recruiter.
I can see why he wouldn't want to, though. Like, because he'd have to put up with some bullshit.
Right. I mean, unfortunate for him, but I do think that this is also,
fine,
you know, we're trying to figure out all this in terms of what the offensive coordinator situation is going to be. And Campbell continues to talk very highly of Ben Johnson. Campbell said in his year-end press conference, you know, I'm going to take a couple weeks to figure out if I want to keep calling plays, but I think I could be really good at it, and I think I got better at it. And so some of the stuff he's saying still kind of points toward, like, Ben Johnson as his OC and Campbell calling plays, and they just set it up like the Saints have with Peyton and Pete Carmichael. But I don't know. Has anything that's been said over the past couple of days by Campbell or Holmes or Goff, I guess, changed your thinking about how they're going to approach that job for 2022?
No, if anything, it makes me think that Campbell is just now starting the process of thinking about what he wants to do. Maybe I'm wrong, but like that's my impression, was that he's now, his whole focus before was just, let's get to the end of the year and make this all work for everybody. Let's, you know, make sure we show Lynn respect and do all we can to max him out while he's here. And then once we get done with that, I'll figure out what I want to do. But I think that's what you just said. Like, I think that him deciding if he wants to go forward, you know, in a Sean Payton capacity, or if this truly was just a, I needed to fix this situation for Goff to get to the end of the year so we could move forward as a team. Like, if that's all it was, then I would think all things are on the table. But if he discovered himself, like Holmes was kind of saying, you know, like, if Campbell discovered himself deep in there, like, I can't, you know, I really need to be involved here, you know, like Peyton is, I guess, and probably like Parcells was over the years, right? Like, I think those are his kind of role models that he looks at as coaches. I could definitely see him hiring someone who understands that, if nothing else. Someone who understands, hey, I'm hiring you to be my OC, but I'm going to be like all over this, and they'll be like, okay, you know, like, I could see it being maybe an older person, like you're saying, somebody who's there to maybe help him as a sounding board type. I said that in the Jason Garrett thing we talked about. People freaked out, and I was like, the only way I could see that would be as if Dan brought someone like that in to be like, I want you to just be there to check me if I get like out of bounds on something, right? Like that kind of thing. But otherwise, I could see, if he's confident, I could see him maybe, Ben Johnson and like Deuce. I could see him being like, you two are my guys, you know, Ben, you're the passing game, Deuce, you're the run game, and the three of us are going to put this thing together. Like, I could see that being a thing for sure. I don't know how it's going to go, though. I could also see him asking Joe Brady to come in. I don't know what he would do. But my sense is that he was still in the early stages and wasn't really going to rush that. Because, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. What do you think? Because I don't know if you have to go one way or the other. You still don't know what your quarterback situation is long term. You haven't committed to that. I don't think you have to make any decision that locks you into a system. I think as long as you're still running the football and, you know, savvy with your run game, that's all you really need to worry about right now.
Well, Campbell said that, you know, the big reason he wouldn't keep calling plays is because he's worried it would take him away from paying enough attention to everything else. You know, the defense, the special teams, individual players on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, how guys are doing too. Like,
And I think that that's certainly a concern, especially this is, you know, just going to be his second year as a head coach, and he's never done play calling before. So I think those are concerns. But I also think I think it's important that you bring up Deuce and you bring up some of these guys on defense and Ben Johnson, because like part of the whole reason Deuce is on the staff and the role that he's in is to help navigate some of those spots where Campbell doesn't have the bandwidth to handle, you know. He's supposed to be, I mean, he's the assistant head coach. He's supposed to handle a lot of the same functions that Dan Campbell does. And then everyone sort of defers to Dan Campbell, you know, when they have to make important decisions. Right. But I think that having that built in, it looks like Deuce will be here for at least another year. It certainly looks like Ben Johnson's going to be here. We'll see about Aaron Glenn, but they have a bunch of guys who can handle their business if they need to, and can help Campbell if he wants to spend a little more time on offense, or if he wants to make himself the play caller. Deuce can take more on his plate and do that. And I think that that's part of why they structured the staff like this too. So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. I've had a lot of people say to me that they need to bring in an experienced play caller, that you can't have someone kind of learning on the job with an NFL team. Yeah. But
well, here's what I would say to that. Like, Dom Capers is on the defensive staff, right? Is whatever the hell. What's his job? What's his title? I don't even know what it is. It's like guy who walks around and, like make sure that everything is okay, right? Like, I think he's there for Glenn. And I think Glenn brought him in as his like guardrails guy. Like, hey, you've been around forever. You're one of the best like around. This is my first time ever doing this. If I get sideways on something, tell me. Like, I think that's why he's there. And I think
senior
that
defensive assistant. Yeah, I think he's like I think it's like Dorsey, like a
yeah. He's like
sort of like Dorsey with Holmes, but
grandfather of the defense.
Right? Yeah, right.
So like that's kind of what I would think that you would look at. Like I mentioned to you, and we put Daryl Dickey on the candidate list there for the OC job because of his, you know, the role that he has with Jimbo Fisher at A&M. And I know that, you know, Campbell is still super close with everybody at A&M, and I know that he has a relationship with Fisher, and I think they talk a lot of football when they have spare time. I think they have common interests and that sort of thing. But, like, Daryl Dickey's setup with Fisher is that he's just his play caller. Like, it is Jimbo Fisher's offense. It is he's the one who built it. You know, he's the one who basically during the week is, you know, the game plan is, I think it runs through him. But on game day, I think Daryl Dickey is just, he's the play caller within the offense. Like, that's his job. And I think he's done that for him before. And like you're saying, I think you could maybe see a weird hybrid situation, whatever works for him. And I think that was Holmes' biggest emphasis point. Dan needs to do whatever he wants to do, whatever works for him. And so if that means finding an old guy who's just an expert play caller, who knows how to play call situations, you teach him what you want the offense to be, and he'll do it. I could definitely see him doing that, something like that, right? I don't know what that is, but you know, you'd look at it and say offensive coordinator, and you'd think, well, that guy has all this power, but in reality, it's like, well, no, he's just calling plays on game day because the coach has said, you do this while I worry about everything else, right? Because I trust you. Look, so I could definitely see that happening somewhere along the way here. Maybe they do the thing like we're talking about where Deuce and Ben Johnson are just the guys with Dan, but they also hire some old guy who comes in and is like Dan's, you know, Sherpa or whatever. I don't know, the grandfather of the offense or whatever you want to call it. I could see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be shocking to me at this point if Ben Johnson doesn't have a bigger role.
Right.
Yeah. And so,
especially if Goff's here, because Goff loves him.
Right. Yeah. And so to bump him up to even to passing game coordinator and then just go out and say to offensive coordinator hopefuls, all right, so Dan's going to call the plays sometimes, and we got Ben Johnson's going to help design the playbook. Do you want to come be coordinator? I don't know how attractive that pitch is going to be, right, though?
Yeah, but I also don't know if you want guys in here that are like, you know, hey, come in here and make yourself look good, and you'll, you know, like, I think that they're still in the process of looking for guys that's like, if that doesn't work for you, we don't want you here. We don't care.
Yeah.
I don't think that they need to be in a situation right now where they're competing for offensive anybody really, because I mean, like, they don't have anybody on the roster that's like super attractive. They don't have a quarterback yet, really. I mean, you know, like, it's not exactly still a, you know, like, oh man, come in here and drive this Rolls Royce we've we've built. So, you know, I don't think that's happening yet. But I think it could go a lot of different ways. I think I would almost be surprised if he completely outsourced it, right? Like, I think I'd be surprised at this point. I think what we're talking about with the more collaborative with Johnson and Deuce and him and
yeah, right.
somebody else maybe, you know. I think, you know, and maybe Randall L. too, I don't know. But I think that seems more... Something weird probably only makes sense here, right? Yeah. Is probably what I would say. That's my guess. That'd be my guess as we enter the clubhouse here on this conversation.
That's what I'm trying to go back through now and like just find
yeah.
like the random
Jason Witten.
Former NFL. So we put Jason Witten on the list and now I'm like, well, maybe I'll bring him in to be the tight ends coach.
I mean, like I would never rule out the possibility that Campbell brings in someone like Jason Witten to do a job that you don't think he's qualified for, but Dan thinks he's qualified for.
Right, right. You know what yeah, I mean? 100%.
Like, that's 100%. I could definitely see him doing something like that. Because if he thinks the guy's qualified to do a job, he's going to hire him. And he doesn't give a shit what anybody else thinks, clearly. So, like, I think that's what I would guess is going to happen here. And I think that's probably why our heads went to where they did when we were thinking about the names on that list, including Jason Witten. Because when I saw it on there, I was like, oh, that's a good one. I wasn't like, that's insane. I was like, oh, that might actually...
That was, so, yeah, it was like, yeah. Do I put Jason Witten on here or do I put like John Kitna on here? Like, who's it going to be? Who are we going to pick from Dan
Carter.
Campbell's
pet?
Quincy Carter would be a really good... Quincy Carter probably would take it
Quincy
in
Carter
a second.
Would take it 5 minutes. Yeah. He'd probably tell you to do a hell of a job too.
Like Corey Schlesinger just like lurks around the Lions facility all the time anyway. Maybe you give him a job.
There you go.
I don't know. It's going to be real. It's going to be interesting. I think it'll give us... sort of another window into just how mm-hmm. Campbell's approaching
absolutely
this staff and next season. I don't know. I would be fine if he wants to keep calling plays. I don't think you need to bring in Joe Brady or someone who's done it for, you know, 5 years, 10 years. No. Like, I think you can let him. I think we've seen, you keep mentioning this because I feel like it keeps going over people's heads that he's just like, he puts off this personality of, you know, being like, you know, the dude personality.
Yeah, right.
And I think people,
they don't get it.
Ignore that. Yeah. He is like, this is not just a gimmick. He is a really smart football mind.
He's obsessed with football. He's obsessed with it. It's all he talks about.
Especially on offense. And so I think that if you had hired him to be, like, if he had gone from the Saints and gone somewhere just to be an offensive coordinator and not a head coach, I think he would have been really good at it.
I do too.
And so,
yeah,
I agree. I feel like he can do this if he can figure out all the other intricacies of what he needs to do on a day to day basis.
It's a great example of, and we're not, you know, calling a shot on whether or not he's going to be whatever, but it's a great example of judging a book by its cover. Because if you talk to people who know him, they will tell you, like, Dan Campbell and Jimbo Fisher are like the same guy. If you talk to them about anything other than football or like hunting, they can't right. carry a conversation, yeah. right? Like, how many times do we hear stuff like this? Like, they can't talk. They can't like function. And so, like, he's obsessed with it. Like, all these guys that, like, you talk to Dan, all of his old friends from back in the day, they talk to him now and they're like, he's like an expert on offensive football. He made it his life. That's what he did. He took his, you know, the guys that lived with him were like, I always thought Dan would become, Dan's career path would be whatever he fell in love with the most, that's what he would do for his job. And that's what he did. And that was either going to be, you know, cattle ranching or coaching football. And it happened to be coaching football because that's what turns him on. And he's obsessed with it. I think that that's the thing that people, because they get so carried away with, and rightly so, you know, all the sound bites and everything else. And he's, you know, he's crazy and all that stuff. I mean, you see him pacing and the coffee and everything else. But, like, he's obsessed with football. Like, he's a really smart football coach. I think that it's time for people to probably start accepting that as a possibility in their head more than they were probably comfortable with. And it's not to say that we're sitting here saying that he's going to be the next Sean Payton. But I'm just saying that I think he has a chance. And I think, Chris, you would agree. Like, I think he has a chance to show people, you know, as they go forward here that he's got some pretty good chops. I think the Lions run game this year and all the stuff they built, like that St. Brown, like that trick play they ran, that the one that Kennedy hit.
Yeah.
I think that was Campbell. And it was just, he said it was just, that was just an action we built off of something that we already installed with St. Brown in the backfield. That's all it was. And I was like, that was one of the prettiest trick plays I've seen in like 5 years. I think that was him. And I'm like, and if guys aren't, if people aren't understanding that by now, yeah, I think it's probably time to start, because I think he's a pretty clever guy with a lot of this stuff. And I think that showed up this year. I'm glad it did for him, because I think that was Holmes's point, right? Like, because Anthony Lynn, I do think early in the year, some of the stuff we saw from him was good too. But I think that once we knew what Campbell was doing too, you're like, okay, well, I think that, you know, he was able to show us a little bit of what he can do too.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Reminder to head over, subscribe, rate, review the podcast. You can get it ad-free on the athletic.com app. I think our subscription deal right now is $3.99 a month, I want to say. I don't have any New York Times bundle subscription details.
Or any information.
Who have asked. I know what you know. So you can get over, get a subscription. You can get us ad-free on the app. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, all the places we've been all along. We appreciate everyone who has been listening and giving us feedback and everything. The other topic here that we haven't really gotten into yet is that Aaron Glenn is set to interview Thursday for the Broncos job. One of, they have 10 candidates at the moment that they have requested interviews with, and several of them are involved in the playoffs this weekend. So this is going to be, you know, at least another week before they start to thin it down a little bit. But Glenn interviewing on Thursday, you know, I tweeted out, I listened, went back, George Payton, the GM in Denver, did a one-on-one with their, you know, in-house team, videos up on their site, and talked about the number one thing they need, that you need to be successful as a coach in the NFL right now, is to be a leader, to be able to motivate guys, to get them to show up and, you know, put in the work every week and buy into everything. And that sounds
a lot, buddy.
Like a guy who's going out there to interview for the job. So, do you think Aaron Glenn is a legitimate candidate there, or you? I mean, I don't know. Where, what's your read on where we're at with Aaron Glenn right now?
I think that he's a legitimate candidate for all the things you just said, and I think, you know, you layer that into George Payton knows Rick Spielman, and obviously Rick knows Chris, and Chris knows Aaron Glenn, and I think that that's probably trickling somewhere in there, and maybe he knows Aaron Glenn too. I think he's a legitimate candidate, but I also think that Aaron Glenn's in a situation where he doesn't have to take anything, and I, you know, maybe it's something where they look at him and they say, let's get you an interview, because I think it's going to be his first head coaching interview. I don't know if he's had one before.
I think he did one last year with, I'll look it up while you're talking.
So still early in the process. One of, you know, so it's another one where, hey, you know, it's good for you to see all this. But I think this might be, if he had one last year, I would say that this would be maybe Aaron's first, like, you should take it serious. Like, you should go in there, not that you didn't take the first one serious, but you should go in there Jets. Really fully, like, you know, ready. Jets. Okay.
Yeah, Jets was the one last year.
Yeah. Like, really fully in your head. Like, can I put myself in this job? And I think you look at the Denver job and it's like, they don't have a quarterbacks right now. That's not ideal. There's a lot about that job that's not ideal. So, you know, he's invested here. He said all the things he said, a couple weeks ago about, you know, wanting to be known as one of the best defensive coordinators that ever coached here in Detroit, how much that means to him. And look, like, he and Dan Campbell are tight. Like, I think that that's something that we don't talk about enough. I think they're very close. And so, worst case scenario, if he doesn't like everything in Denver, he's just going to come back here and keep doing what he's doing with Campbell. I think that's how he probably looks at this. But, you know, I wouldn't just shove it off as nothing, right? I mean, I would ask you the same thing. Like, what's your sort of read on it? I don't think it's nothing, because I think that George Payton, I think that's a pretty sincere, you know, want in a head coach. And I think we would agree that Aaron Glenn absolutely is that guy. I don't know if he's ready to do everything yet. I don't know if he would think that he's ready to do everything yet. But, you know, like Holmes says, you can only be on the driving range for so long, right? So, I mean, I don't know. What do you think about this whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting spot. I mean, I think George Payton can be a really good general manager in this league. He was with the Vikings for a long time. They also have, you know, I think John Elway's tried to take his hands off things more, but John Elway's over there. The team is being sold. Like, it's supposed to be sold this offseason, too. You mentioned the quarterback thing. So there's a lot of, I don't know that it's an ideal situation to go into as a first-time head coach.
Good franchise, though,
sounds like
right?
There's a lot of challenges. Good franchise. Yeah. I think working to the Lions' benefit and maybe to Glenn's detriment here, you know, Payton talked in that interview about he doesn't necessarily need a great play caller, but if someone's really good on offense or even on defense, you know, that would be a bonus. I think, you know, we've seen time and again in the NFL here that when one thing doesn't work out, teams usually go the other way, right?
Right,
and
exactly.
So Vic Fangio was a longtime defensive coordinator. It didn't work out. The Broncos' offense was bad. They need a new quarterback. So you're sort of thinking, we need to get better. We need someone in here who can lead this offense and can help us if we draft a quarterback or whatever. And that's maybe that is Aaron Glenn, but that's certainly not where his specialty, his area of expertise lies at this moment. You know, he's a guy that's going to help your defense. So I think that probably works the Lions' benefit.
I would also say this. He's not a career climber, Aaron Glenn. You should not think about Aaron Glenn in the way that we think about a lot of other coordinator coach types. You know, like, I think he wants to be a head coach, of course, because he wants to be the best at what he does. But, like, it's a genuine thing, the relationship building and the trust and all the stuff that we saw out there that he puts with these guys. Like, that's what makes him a great coach, I think. And he knows that. And I think that his bond with players, and I think the growth process that he's involved in right now with the guys on this team will be a factor for him. But I would also say that the Lions, for their part, have an opportunity here to show Aaron Glenn how much they value him. And I think that includes taking whatever input he had on defensive draft picks last year and ramping it up by quite a bit. Like stuff like that, you know. I think that those are conversations, too, that probably should come of this that are good and healthy. And, you know, we'll see how everybody responds to it all. But I think if you're the Lions, this is not necessarily a bad thing at all. This is probably a really good thing because he is a good coach. They hit one there. Like, I think we can say that now after a year. And I don't care if, like, he had games where they gave up 50 or whatever. Like, he got guys to believe. He got guys better all year. And he gave quarterbacks problems all year, too. You know, so I think they got a good one there. And, you know, that's a guy that in the past, Lions have had good coaches here before, right? And they don't show them how much they mean to the franchise. I think this is an opportunity, all things considered, and we'll see how it goes, for the Lions to do exactly that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because it's something we've talked about before, is that, you know, as you head into this offseason, again, to go back to this idea of collaboration and everything, if Aaron Glenn thinks Tracy Walker needs to be a centerpiece of his defense moving forward, that should matter a lot to Brad Holmes. And same thing with, you know, like if he thinks, like if Alex Anzalone was a guy that he was pushing for last year and thinks did a nice, he thinks did a nice job for him this year, that probably should hold some weight for Brad Holmes. So I think that it is part of this here is just what are you going to let Aaron Glenn kind of dictate for his defense, especially if Dan Campbell's going to put himself more on the offense. Is this going to be Dan? Is this going to be Aaron Glenn's defense through and through? And I think that they, I mean, this is a chance to sort of give him that leeway. I would also mention that the Senior Bowl this year, which the Lions are coaching, has set this up so that the head coaches have to basically promote guys from their own staff to run. Like the head coaches are supposed to be the sort of advisors. So Campbell has to pick a head coach for the week. So I don't know. I'm curious to see if that's going to be Deuce or Aaron Glenn, frankly.
So it'll be Glenn, and then Deuce will be the OC. Aubrey Pleasant will be the DC, and they will have the most intense Senior Bowl practices you have ever seen. All of them will be mic'd up. I think this is going to be like a dream come true for the Senior Bowl people. Because Robert Saleh is the same. Like, it's the same on the other side with the Jets staff, right? Like, yeah, this should be wild.
It's going to be really good. The Senior Bowl is going to be really good, and I probably better than the last time the Lions staff went down there.
Probably
Which I know people, like the coaches and scouts who were there, got frustrated every day because the Lions ran like an hour and 45-minute practices, and they did at least 45 to 50 minutes of special teams and everything. You're like, all right, can
what
we just
are
see
you doing?
Some one-on-one matchups here, please? Let a quarterback throw a pass.
Patricia, Jesus Christ.
This will not be that. No. Although I wonder, Matty P might be down there with the
Patriots. He'll be down there real mad.
Hobnobbing with everyone.
I don't think he's going to be having fun, Chris.
Lost my train of thought now. But I mean, Aaron Glenn.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, good point. Yeah,
wow.
Go ahead.
I do think Aaron Glenn is a legit candidate in Denver. We haven't really heard his name come up elsewhere yet.
I think he could get an interview in Houston. I could see that.
Yep, for sure. I think those are probably the two that you circle and wonder. And Houston would be interesting.
Yes, for a lot of reasons.
Houston would be interesting. Maybe better than Denver, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, look, and that's the thing I would say. Like, if he goes into an interview with a team that has a pretty good situation that he likes, that's why I'm glad, like you said last year, he had the one with the Jets. Like, he wasn't taking that job, right? Like, I'm sure he went into it, took it serious, but like, come on. He knew he wasn't taking it. Like, that wasn't going to happen. This is different, right? I think this is a year I think you would take it a little more serious, whatever that is for you. And you're, you know, we all know that in your own personal professional development as someone. Like, the more confidence you get in yourself, I think the more serious you take on the possibility of taking on a role that maybe you once thought wasn't something you could handle. Well, maybe now I can handle it. And I think that's probably how he'll look at these this year, if I had to take a guess. Just on, he hasn't said anything to us, of course. I mean, anything he says out there in public, for the most part, is what he's thinking. He didn't hold much back. I don't think so. We'll see. But yeah, good for him. I mean, cool to see him get one right away, because we talked about that, right? Like, was he going to get an interview, you know, despite the fact that the team was 3 wins and the defense statistically wasn't good? But is he going to get one because of what people saw and how they played this year? And yeah, I think he's going to get a couple because of what people saw, how they played this year. And I think he earned them.
I mentioned kind of taking more of his input on free agents. Holmes spoke a little bit about the free agents, about Tracy Walker and Charles Harris. He sort of touched on Trey Flowers in a way that made me think he's going to cut Trey Flowers soon.
Yeah, probably soon.
But appreciates his efforts. Anything else that jumped out from you on any of those guys, I guess, or on anything else from Holmes's press conference on Tuesday?
Yeah, Walker definitely sounds like they're ready to, unless that gets crazy or something. But like we were talking about before we were recording, like it's hard to guess on that market. Like what were you guessing at the end of the day on Walker? Like, what did you say?
It's so hard. He's such an unusual case because that, like, he's had a ton of tackles. He's played a ton of games. That pick on Sunday was his first in 2 years.
Right.
So he's kind of tough to figure out where he fits. But like John Johnson, who was a guy I think we talked about
right.
being a possibility for the Lions last year. Got like three, I don't want to say the wrong number now, but it was in
the 30s.
3 years at $11.25 million and $20 million guaranteed.
Right.
That maybe is what Walker would ask for and say that's where the market is. He was a good player. He had 100 tackles. You know, like that's where the market is. And I would guess the Lions would be like 8 or 9, maybe.
Yeah.
Give him that $20 million guaranteed. Give him 4 years and 36.
36.
I don't know. I think that's like top 15 money at safety.
And I think that's fine. And to your point, like the conservative person in you would say, well, I don't know if he's worth 8. I don't know if he's that good. But I think that what you do is you say, we think he's that good. I think you're that good, Tracy. And I also think like, you know, you're a huge part of this like operation, just not just because of what you're here, you know, what you do on the field, but like guys look up to you, guys trust you. Like they listen to you, you're a captain, you're a leader, all these things. That to us is worth whatever extra couple million bucks. Like I think that's what you do. And if you have to pay him 8.5 or 9, then that's what you do. And I think you can't go crazy, like Holmes said. Yes, he did say that. You know, they're gonna have more money this year, but it's not gonna be something where you can go insane. But like all indications we've gotten from Tracy Walker over the last couple of years is that, you know, if you show him that you care about him, he's going to do everything that he can for you. And I think that Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn have showed him that they care about him a lot. And I think he probably wants to be here. But, you know, like you said, it's not going to be for a discount for free.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, you gotta make it work. But it's I think he's ready to make it work too, I guess. Maybe more than some others would be.
The hometown discount thing doesn't exist really. But I think, I mean, Walker spoke whenever the player Monday or whatever, and I think he brought up something, you know, he obviously, you know, you want to get to free agency if you're a player when you have a chance to really cash in, and he's 26, he'll be 27 this offseason. He had 108 tackles this year, 103 a couple years ago. He started 15 games this year. Like he's hitting it at a pretty good spot. But he also mentioned you know, I don't want to go somewhere where I hate the coaches and I don't like my teammates, right. And then I just go there for the money and I'm miserable because I love these coaches and I love these teammates. And so, like, his agent was probably like, stop talking.
Yeah.
But, right, you know, that's the type of thing. Like, when we talk about hometown discount, like, that's something that does come into play. If you make a competitive offer, if you're not way off what he's going to get on the market, like, if you're close and you give him the guaranteed money that he's looking for and like all these things sort of line up and he looks at it and says, well, do I want an extra million to go play for the whoever it is,
the Jets
go play for the Jets
the Jaguars
or do I want to stay here and be a captain on this defense and like I know what this place is going to be and what it is. And I think that it sounds like that's going to count on both sides, and I think that that's good because yeah, I mean, I don't know that he's like we talked about Kyle Hamilton as a draft pick. Like they still need a safety, like a really good
safety.
That
would be a hell of a pairing,
But I think Tracy Walker's proven that he is a really good, like he's a good NFL safety now, and he's a very important piece of this locker room. I mean, Goff, they put up the you know, in the locker room after the video after week 18, and Campbell told the players to break it down after his speech, and Goff pointed to Walker and had Walker come in and lead everyone. Like, he's a guy that they respect through and through. So
he's a football player. Like, that's the distinction that you give guys like that, right? Like, at this point, and I think he's proved that. I think he's earned that. That's the thing that Matt Patricia's staff questioned with Tracy Walker every day that he was here.
Well.
Do you love it enough? All this shit. Yeah, he does. I mean, and that's the situation that I think he proved, because it's true for him. I think that, you know, we talked to so many guys over the years, football players. You see so many different guys and types of guys and alphas and guys that aren't alphas and guys that love the game and guys that say they love the game but really hate it and guys that hate it and are just there for the money and it's obvious. Like, I think some guys, like, it takes them a while to figure out who they are. And I think Tracy Walker has sort of discovered here along with Dan Campbell that he's a lot like Dan Campbell. I think he just really loves football and loves being around a team like this, like a team that really likes each other. And some guys, that's not really a big thing. It doesn't matter. And it's fine. And some guys, I think that's a huge, huge deal. And I think for him, it's a huge, huge deal. And I think he's probably ready more now to admit that to himself than he maybe was 2 or 3 years ago. Because he's seen both sides of it, right? And yeah, this isn't a Kenny Golladay situation, I would say. I think Tracy Walker's wants to be here. I think that's a genuine want. I think I'm ready to believe that.
What about Harris? Because he is Charles Harris.
Charles Harris,
this
yeah.
is a, sort of the other thing here. Tracy Walker, by the way, before we get off it. Like, I can't... Quandre Diggs got hurt in Week 18. And every story coming out of there about how it has been about... Like, his, he had several teammates stay with him.
I know.
To get surgery.
The entire league was like, my God, I hope you're okay.
What a leader he is, all this. And part of the reason he is not here anymore is because...
The only reason
Lions were worried he was going to be a bad influence,
yeah, on Tracy Walker. Walker.
Right. And so I don't know how you score that one at home that Tracy Walker's emerged as a leader now, but anyway, so Charles Harris is sort of in this other camp where the Lions signed a bunch of these guys down these 1 year deals, brought them in short term, or just like, give us whatever you got, we'll see how it goes. And now you look at, you've got Harris, you've got Josh Reynolds, Anzalone, Khalif Raymond, sort of, I guess you kind of put Jalen Reeves-Maybin in that category. He was a one-year deal, you know, obviously have been here, but not for this staff. So do you think with Charles Harris that the fact that they gave him an opportunity helps? Or is he just going to be like, look, I led yeah. the team in sacks. Whoever's going to give me the most money is where I'm going.
I think that the opportunity is going to help. Holmes did say yesterday that mentally Harris is in such a better place than where he was, you know, prior to. And I assume that that means last year. I think those guys probably have a relationship, is my guess. I mean, Holmes, wasn't he a scout in Atlanta, and didn't Charles Harris play in Atlanta? I don't know. But I mean, he was one of the first guys they signed. Like, I think that my guess on Harris, without having more, you know, we know more about Tracy Walker just because we've been around him longer. But like, my guess is that he appreciates the opportunity and all of that stuff that they gave him, because, yeah, he was a high draft pick that looked like he was about to fizzle out and everyone had given up on him. And that's, you know, he was the guy that we talked about as like the example. Tyrell Williams too. Like, you know, it didn't work out for him, but like, you can come here and prove everybody wrong. Everybody that thought you were a bum and a bust and whatever else, like, you can come here, we'll give you the snaps to prove everybody wrong. So I do think that he probably, right, because he wouldn't be here if he didn't think like this. I do think he probably is going to maybe listen to them more, but I don't think he's in a situation either where he's going to, he shouldn't give any discounts to anybody, because if they draft, they draft Kayvon Thibodeau or Aiden Hutchinson, and he's sitting there, you know.
Right. And right? You get Okora back. And right. He, yeah, I mean.
I think Charles Harris should take as much money as he can possibly get. Like, that's what I would say. Yeah. And if he moves on, then okay for him. And if he's here, I think they'd love to have him back. But I don't think they're going to be heartbroken if they can't pay him, right? Like, that's my read on that.
Yeah, I mean, he played for them on less than $2 million this year, which was understandable. Yeah. He basically just needed somewhere who would give him a chance. Right. But, yeah, I mean, And I don't know that he's up into like Devon Kennard left and got $20 million over 3 years. And I don't think he's going to get that. So maybe you do get him back for some sort of discount. Maybe you give him another year.
Maybe. At
double his price and say, all right, do it again.
Let's see what happens.
I don't know. Yeah. But I think that that's sort of another interesting thing here is how many of these one-year guys have played their way, I guess, into being more than one-year guys. And that's something we don't really know yet either.
He's definitely one, but it's like he's the one. Harris is one where it's like he's probably the one where he could go somewhere else and probably get more than they could give him. Everybody, like Jerry Jacobs, right? Like AJ Parker. I mean, I don't know. Well,
and those guys are. I mean, those guys are still like those rookie.
I guess they're still on. You're
deals
right,
are like multiple years.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think there's a bunch of those guys where.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Anzalone's not
right. That's a good
getting
one.
Top 10 linebacker money anywhere, and like.
Vitae.
I don't know what Nick Williams' situation will be.
So Vitae is the one we didn't ask about, I guess.
Yeah.
And you know, you mentioned Flowers as the answer he gave on Flowers was, well, yeah. I mean, it was like, we love him; he's a great guy. But like, holy shit, look at that contract, right? Like that.
Yeah, he's got a $24 million cap.
Ain't happening, right? Like, I think that that's safe to bet. Vitae, that contract is not happening, right? Like, that's not going to continue. But I don't know. Like, I mean, like, Sewell and Vitae are like father and son out there, for crying out loud. They love each other. And Vitae had a really good year, I think, for them. Like, yeah. Vitae was good. Like, Vitae, he was moving around. I watched him for a whole series or two series on Sunday, just because it was, you know, the last game, whatever. And he was moving around better in January at the end of this season than he was at any point in 2020 when we saw him out there. So he's not a tackle. You're not paying him that money, but like, he's a pretty good guard and he fits everything that they need right now if he can stay healthy. So I don't know. What do you think about him? What do you think? What's going to happen there?
I mean, I would try to keep him before I do anything else. Explore and his cap it, right? Number. Yeah. His cap number is big next year. It's like 80, it's really almost $9 million, but mm-hmm. it's less than it initially would have been because they gave him like a small signing bonus this year to free up some money. And I don't know. I mean, I think there's wiggle room there to sort of tweak it around. I was just looking, like, our old buddy Graham Glasgow just took a pay cut to mm-hmm. stay in Denver.
Yeah.
But he was sort of in a similar situation. He was getting more. I think his cap hit next year was like 11 or 12 million. Yeah. And so they restructured and dropped that number way down and gave him a signing bonus. And I think he probably could there look at Vitae and do mm-hmm. something kind of similar. Like, he doesn't have really anything. Most of what his cap number is next year is base salary. I mean, it's like 6.5 or 7 million yeah. base salary. So you could convert, you know, a huge chunk of that to signing bonus, bring down the number. And then, you know, you're going to have to take a hit at some point here. But mm-hmm. if you have to take a $5 million hit in 2 years, like, I don't know that's something fine. You'd lose sleep over.
Well, I think it's a similar situation as Graham's too, right? Like, didn't Graham have to miss a bunch of games or whatever for some reason? And
yeah,
then,
yeah.
like, maybe wasn't at his best. And Vitae, obviously, last year. And this year, you saw that he was closer to his best. And it's like, okay, well, maybe if you restructure it, it works for everybody. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you could convert, like, I don't want to get too much into the math, but if you take $4.5 million of his base salary and stretch it out and convert it to a signing bonus, that drops your cap number next year by $3 million. Then he's a $5.5 million cap hit.
Which is much better. Yeah.
Fine. Yeah. That's perfectly acceptable for a starting guard in this league. So, maybe that's what they do. I mean, maybe you do something like that.
Yeah, I like that. I like to explore it. I mean, that's definitely seems, and that's a great, I mean, my God, I mean, we would have, what a turnaround from a year ago.
Right.
You know, we were sitting there thinking about like any way you could get out of this disaster of a contract. You know, it's just like, it's a nightmare. I don't even care if he ends up good. He can't be on this, you know, and it's like, and now you look at it and, you know, I mean, he had a really good year. I think he did. I think he had a good year. I think he had a beneficial year for them. He did all the things they asked him to do. He's a good dude. Like, everybody likes him. So, yeah, I'd try to make that work too if I could.
Well, I don't know what our schedule. I know our schedule is going to change a little bit here on the podcast. I just want to prepare mm-hmm. people for that. We go to a little bit lighter here as we get into the off season, but we both will be at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah,
as of right now.
My God, what a time of that will be for all.
That is, when is that? It's the first week of February, right? So I would imagine we'll do something before that and then probably right after that or maybe down there. Or I don't know. I don't even really know what the media setup is. It used to just be like show up and you could like walk around on the field during practices. And now I'm pretty sure.
I doubt that's happening.
Yeah, hide in a corner. Yeah, but should be a lot of fun to see the Lions staff with that team. The roster should be out sometime this week, and we'll see who they have to coach. And especially,
a lot of local guys, too, I think. Both Michigan and Michigan State have a bunch of guys, I think, there this year.
Look and see what quarterbacks they get on their roster, too, because that's usually something the Senior Bowl kind of lets you hand pick. So,
right, which guys do you want? Yeah.
If you end up with Pickett and Willis or something,
let's go.
Get a feeling for who they're really interested in. But yeah, that should be fun. Like I said, we'll be recording at least twice a month between now and the draft, and we'll try to give you a heads up. But we'll sort of be timing it around Senior Bowl and then the combines a month after that, and then free agency. And so there's all these benchmark dates on the calendar. But we'll be here at least twice a month on the podcast over the next couple months here, and kind of go from there. I don't know. It should be a fun off season.
Be a lot going on. It'll probably be more than twice a month because we've just got like there's be a lot of draft stuff and everything else that pops up, I'm sure. But it's a big offseason. Like, I think that that's the, you know, it's a big one. And that's the, you know, Holmes did say, right? Like, everything now is just going to be better than it was a year ago. And he said that, and I was like, okay, it has to be. It doesn't need to, you know, like, it has to be. It's not an option. It's a requirement, like, for this to go forward. Right. It has to be an elite offseason for the Lions. They cannot have misses, errors, botches, whatever. It has to be great. Like, I think that that's the final point. We've said this for weeks now, but that's the final point on the 2020 is closed, or 2021 is closed. You go to 2022. Like, your offseason last year had to be good, and you had to survive it. Now it has to be great. And you have to really get growth, I think, out of this year in a way that you probably unrealistically couldn't achieve last year.
Yeah. I mean, I also just looking at the schedule for next year, and like,
it's manageable.
At least 8 of their games, including 2 each against Minnesota and Chicago, are going to be against new head coaches. Mm-hmm. Like, this is,
yeah, right.
They could do some things next year. I'm not predicting like 10-7, but this could be a lot better next year.
Parity exists in the league for a reason. You just have to do it right.
Right. It's supposed to be there for you. It is supposed to be a real thing.
So, keep doing it right. Somebody asked that question earlier on Twitter. They were like, is there another team the Lions should like sort of model their offseason after? And I was like, this is going to sound corny, but they should copy what they did last year and ramp it up and just do it harder. Like, that's what they should do, right? I think that that's what you do. Keep your head down. And it's got to be your best stuff. And I think they understand that. I think they know it. Obviously, this is not, no one was back patting themselves yesterday. But like, I think they're very excited right now because a lot of the work they've done this year, I think, is now about to start really ramping up.
Yeah. And I think just my last thing here is I think it's going to be interesting too to sort of see, you know, we saw Holmes last year had to clean up Bob Quinn's mess. They didn't really do that much aggressive. We know he can draft. Yep. And that they'll probably run a pretty good draft, but what's he going to do with their, you know, look, as it sets up right now, they're at like $33 million or something of projected cap space. You start talking about restructuring Vitae and cutting Flowers and all these things, like you could end up in the $50 million range. Like, what's he going to do here? What are you going to prioritize? Are you going to give anyone... Are you giving anyone that 3- and 4-year deal you didn't last year? I don't know. I think this is going to be kind of our first tell for what Holmes does when he thinks they're a little closer to being where they need to go.
Yep. Good point. Well said.
So we'll get back to you again before the Senior Bowl, probably in a couple weeks here, just to set you up for that event and see what the Lions have done, if they fired an offensive coordinator by that point or not.
I would hope by then. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So again, make sure you get over to theathletic.com. You can pick up a subscription, and we've got deals running. You can get us one of these years ad-free on the app there, or on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, wherever else you listen to podcasts. And thanks for sticking with us all season, especially as they were winless for 10 weeks there. It was a fun close to the year, and we hope you enjoyed the ride along the way here on the podcast. So for Nick, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.